Welcome to Women Got Game, where we uncover untold stories of extraordinary women in sports across Northwest Ohio and beyond. I'm Sophia Fisher, and we're going to celebrate the evolution of female athletes, coaches, and sports enthusiasts. Let's dive into a world often overlooked in the broader sports narrative. Ready to explore? Let's play. On this episode of Women Got Game, we talk with Fred Shamil, head coach of Bowling Green University's Women's Mid-American Conference basketball team. We'll talk about his years of coaching at South Carolina with Dawn Staley to building a competitive Falcons program. Hey, welcome, Coach Shamil. It's great to have you in the studio today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's get to it and talk some women's basketball. I'm going to ask you a few questions here. Let's start off with maybe your roots and your early days. Really tell us about your love of basketball and how it all began, and then how did you become a women's basketball coach in D1?
The roots, let's see. I was dribbling the basketball around the hallways of, you know, junior highs and high schools for, you know, about 6 years. And I actually played three sports, football, baseball, basketball. I was probably least equipped to play basketball at the size I am, but I had a love for it. I just couldn't put it down. It was always in my hands. You know, in Alaska, there's a rec club. Which I was born in Alaska, but in Alaska, there's a rec club on every corner. Just, you know, because it's cold in the winter. And
what else are you going
to
do, right?
You got to have something to do. So movie theaters and rec clubs and bars. So a little bit too young for the bars. And movies were not my thing because I couldn't sit still. So basketball was it. Played a lot of basketball. And then summer hit, and those ice rinks they had outside suddenly emptied, and there were basketball hoops inside. And, you know, the lights never went out in Alaska during the summer. It's sunshine all the time. And played a long, long time during the summer until I got called in indoors. But, you know, went to junior college for a couple years in California. Actually loved California. Came back to University of Alaska Fairbanks, and then got a call from my JUCO coach and asked me if I wanted to be an assistant coach. And I thought it was a great idea because I was done playing with these ugly knees, and had an opportunity to go coach. And the same year that I went down there is the same year he became an administrator, and suddenly I was a head coach at 22. So it was a wild ride. JUCO basketball, all the stories are true. It was pretty wild. You know, I knew the sheriff's department pretty well. You know, I was there for 11 years at two different JUCOs. And during that time, I met Gary Kloppenberg. His dad was a longtime NBA assistant coach with the Seattle Supersonics back in the Rain Man and Gary Payton days, the glove. So he had a defense. It was called the SOS Pressure Defensive System, and he actually mentored me. And that's what we run at Bowling Green. But you know, Gary left the same year I got there. Maybe it's me. maybe it's me.
But what'd you do?
he went to the Charlotte Bobcats. And so during that period of time, the WNBA coach, GM, asked him if there was anybody like him around. He was like, I got the perfect guy. And then all of a sudden, I'm in women's basketball in the WNBA.
Wow, that's an awesome story, especially coming from Alaska.
Yeah. Not too many people make it out of there.
No kidding, but it's interesting. And looking at your history, too, you know, you were a scout. You've definitely done, I think, all things from playing ball all the way through scouting and recruitment. So talk to us a little bit more about your journey and the WNBA.
Yeah. Well, you know, being a JUCO coach, you do everything from filling up the water buckets to driving the van. So I was pretty prepared for the WNBA, except, you know, when you get to the WNBA, there's not a lot of coaching. Like, those players know what to do. They've been playing basketball their entire life. You work them out, you hone their skills. You know, as coaches at that level, you're probably managing talent more than you're building it. So that experience was a little bit different than what I had, but you know, going to all those different venues like Madison Square Garden and Staples Center, it was a heck of a ride. And there I met Don. You know, Don Staley's been a figure in my life since, you know, the early 2000s. And she actually gave me my first job in collegiate women's basketball. So, you know, the WNBA is something that I enjoy watching, but I don't think I'd enjoy coaching it. I love mentoring young women and turning them into pros and making their dreams come true. That's more my line.
So you had such tremendous success with Don Staley and the national championships and whatnot. What was that like? I mean, really, that was a ride too, wasn't it? As far as you were with her for a while and you just achieved the highest level, in my opinion.
I was actually lucky enough to come in right when they were ascending. Before that time, I mean, she had to grind it out. There were 100 people in the stands. We went to play them actually when I was working at Penn State. And there was maybe, you know, a few hundred people. We actually won. That was probably the last time I beat her. but Maggie Lucas, my assistant coach, she made the game-winning shot. It was a tight game.
That's awesome.
You know, when that was just ascending, I hopped in on the back end. It was Asia Wilson's sophomore year, Elena Coates' senior year. I think we had like four or five pros on that team, and we didn't do very well. We lost in the Sweet 16 against a Syracuse team that was a shocker. That was actually in North Dakota, so we weren't really equipped for the weather. But that following year, it kind of clicked for us. We had two transfers that were sitting out, one ACC player of the year and another all ACC player in Alicia Gray, that was the WNBA rookie of the year. So we had a pretty good roster. We actually lost our center, one of our draft picks. She was a fifth round draft pick in the WNBA. She got hurt down the stretch. But you know, we pulled it together. We went to Stockton. They sent us all the way to California for a regional. We actually swept through that tough game against Florida State, I remember. And then we were in Dallas. And Dallas, we were there the same time our men actually made the Phoenix Final Four. So it was pretty interesting, wild time. But you know, we got to watch firsthand. I was courtside. You can see me courtside scouting. We were watching that Mississippi State UConn game, and watching the shot. You know, it was pretty exciting. But I was not prepared for my Mississippi State scout. But luckily I had them since I got to South Carolina. But they were a juggernaut. It was always a tough game. But I thought we were prepared. Had a great game against them. Great game plan. Won the national championship. And I can remember just sitting there, you know, just taking it all in. And all of a sudden, you know, my eyes started watering. I was like, what the heck's going on here? It just kind of washes over you, and you're just have this euphoria and relief. And it was just an incredible feeling that I've never felt before. I mean, I have had the joy of kids and marriage and all that, but sure, this is different. It was different.
What an experience.
And you know, I remember us all in a circle, hugging each other, and I mean, everybody's crying, but Dawn was like, what are you guys doing?
I know she wanted to cry.
She was trying to be tough.
She was holding
that,
it back. Holding
yeah,
it
that
back.
Philly tough. She was trying to be tough. But it was a crazy feeling that I haven't since felt. Even our 22 national championship season, it was more of a relief. Because we were favored the entire time. You know, we went through the COVID years where we were undefeated and didn't get an opportunity to play in the national championship. So when we got to 22, we had a mission, and took care of it. And it was actually more of a relief, a piano off your back that we won.
Yeah, it's incredible, incredible journey. And let's fast forward a bit then. Let's talk about what do you think, what made you the right fit to come to Bowling Green State University and talk about that transition? Was it hard leaving when you're at that highest level and national championship and then you're coming to the mid-majors? I mean, what was clicking in your mind at that time to be able to come to this program now?
It was hard leaving because I'd been there for 8 years. We had roots. My kids had roots. My wife had roots there. It's a fantastic place. Columbia, South Carolina is a city, but it's also a college town. So it was hard to leave. It was hard to leave. But if there was going to be any time, it was going to be then. We had just lost in the Final Four to Caitlin Clark and the Hawkeyes, and I think it was going to be a reloading year, but I don't know how the heck Don won it the next year, but it was going to be a reloading year. This job came open, BG came open, you know, and I knew BG from our Temple days. We played them in a game and we came to BG and the stands were packed. The fans were rabid. We had a really, really good team at Temple, but they ended up beating us. I think they hit about 15 threes on us, including the center hit like four of them. Liz Honiger. I don't know if you remember her.
Yeah, I do. I sure do.
Yeah, wow.
Awesome player.
But they were just banging three. Allie Mann was there. She was a pro. So I remember that vividly. So when the job came open, I knew there was, you know, this tremendous support from the community. I knew it had great history. There was an opportunity to get some players in this area in the contiguous states. So it was a great opportunity for me, and quite honestly, Derek Vandermeer took a chance on me. There's not a lot of jobs for males on the women's side unless you've established yourself, and I was an unestablished, you know, assistant coach. Good resume as an assistant coach, but not as a head coach. So Derek took a chance on me, gave me an opportunity, and the rest is history.
Sure, and you've been such a great recruiter. Talk a little bit about how you identify and nurture that type of talent to come into D1. I mean, what are you looking for, and what are the kind of, I guess, primary characteristics of a premium athlete for D1?
Yeah, for me at this level, it's about motor, pace of play, aggression, competitiveness, and how you interact with your teammates and coaches. I think if you have that base foundation, we're pretty good at developing talent. We can get you a jump shot. We can, you know, teach you how to handle the ball. But if you don't have that motor, if you don't have that competitive spirit, BG is probably not the place for you, because every day is a war in practice. We go at each other. We play at a very high pace. We're very competitive. We have a great group of practice guys that really get after it. So we know the type of kid we like to recruit. Now, South Carolina recruiting is a whole different story.
100% different.
Whole different story. 100%. And you know, the landscape has changed since I've gotten here. It's more of a monetary thing than it is I love this university and coaching staff. So the landscape has changed. I'm glad where I'm at. I miss South Carolina, but I'm very happy where I'm at.
So I know that I've seen your practices, by the way, and you're right, they get after it. I mean, it's they're rough and tough, and I kind of have to back up off the sidelines because they're really running hard, but they're strong.
That, and you don't want to hear my mouth.
And this is where I was going to go with that, because they said several players have described your approach as demanding. They say you're a very tough coach, but they said he's all heart.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, how do you balance really pushing those high standards while ensuring that your players are feeling you know, supported and cared for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you hear it a lot, like you have to have a relationship with your players, but, you know, it's not easy. There's a lot of time demands on me. There's a lot of time demands on them, but you have to make time to build a relationship. You have to, you know, I put a candy dish in my office. It's kind of like, you know, fishing bait. So when they come in to get a piece of candy, yeah, all of a sudden we're in a conversation.
There you go. The sweets out.
Give
them some sugar.
Yeah, I catch them unaware. Have a seat. I got the box of tissue right next to the chair. We have conversations. Sometimes, you know, they're you know, just surface conversations. Sometimes they go a little bit deeper, and it depends, you know, how much they want to share. And but I'm always there for them, and I try to make sure they know I care about them, and I tell parents, I sit them down, and I'm a girl dad. Like, I know the relationship. I know that's your treasure, even more so than guys. Like, guys, you can drop them off at the corner and be like, see you later. I'll pick you up. I'll pick you up around 8 p.m., you know, after dark. Your treasure, your young woman, you want them taken care of. And I tell them, you know, if you drop her off at the doorstep, I'm taking care of her like she's my own. So I try to fulfill that promise with all of our players.
So let's talk a little bit too about, I mean, I love that you talk about culture a lot since I've known you, and, you know, competing for prospects, I think at the mid-major level, I think it's different now. Like you said, it's just a different landscape, but talk about the resource constraints in mid-majors and how do you compete when you don't have necessarily the budget that you want? There's only so much money in the kettle. Talk about how you attract athletes and what are you offering?
Yeah, you either get on board or overboard with the climate today. There is a monetary aspect to it now, but there's always a way to make sure that you have a quality program. We're always going to be competitive just because of the type of people that we get, and our university is a very good university. The monetary piece is tough. It's tough. Quite honestly, you know, you're recruiting these kids for years, and you can be sitting on them, and you're their best friends and have a great relationship with them, and they've visited campus three times, and then all of a sudden a P4 school, you know, comes in and swoops them up with, you know, a six-figure income. So that part is tough. That part is tough. A lot of schools are going international because those kids want an opportunity. There's a great grassroots foundation in Europe that develops good talent, and a lot of it's untouched. They have a great pro model, but they don't have a great collegiate model there. So they want to come to the U.S. They want to get an education. They want to experience the U.S. So that's one avenue. The other avenue is junior college players that want an opportunity. They're at a junior college for 2 years. They're grinding it out where they get a T-shirt and a value meal. And all of a sudden you're coming in with a full scholarship and, you know, all the Nike gear they can handle. And yeah, that's attractive to them. Not to say that they're not getting money, but, you know, that's a lesser amount that you have to deal with. I think the people that are getting left by the wayside are the second tier talent high school kids. Because, you know, now you have the portal. The portal, you know, is I won't say it's a money grab, but there's definitely a monetary aspect to it. And if you're talented, you're going to garner some financial stability there. But, you know, there's all these schools going in there to get a proven commodity. They're getting 12 points and five boards. They know that. With a high school kid, you don't know what you're getting. You don't know what they're getting until they show up on campus and play a season for you.
Sure, 100%.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going. We're going NIL and beyond. So, you know, the name, image, and likeness for our audience listening. I've done, you know, other episodes on NIL. But overall, what would you say, especially in the mid-majors, what is it going to do to women's basketball, and what has it already done? Do you think it's put us back to some degree, or do you feel that there's still a lot of opportunity? Because I'm an NIL agent, as you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of what I do is for corporate sponsors and whatnot. I'm still educating sponsors on how they can participate, how they can stand out, what it means to support a program or even really just an individual athlete, and then developing their brand and whatnot. Do you have time as a coach, or what is your philosophy on helping athletes kind of maneuver through this landscape so that, you know, you can have a championship team and have the same girls that started with you 4 years mm-hmm. later?
Yeah, I think the most important thing you can offer as a coach, because there's only a limited amount of time, there's a limited amount of money. The only thing you can offer them really is opportunity to, you know, get them in touch with a great agent like yourself, or you know, get some local area businesses to support them. You know, at fundraising at this level is very important. A lot of it goes into a contingency fund where you can disperse that. That's rev share. So, You know, I do think it's important. I don't think NIL is in the true spirit of what it was originally thought to be. It was an opportunity for young women and men to get money from, you know, their celebrity. I don't think it was a bidding war with universities, and that's where it's become a problem. So there has to be some sort of, you know, I don't know if the NCAA can do it. It's probably a congressional thing, but there has to be some sort of guidelines, some rules. It's the Wild Wild West right now, and highest bidder wins.
Sure, I agree 100%. So you talked about working alongside, you know, Dawn Staley, but and her being a mentor. But what other mentors have you had throughout your life that you'd say that were very influential to you, or they were key pieces of what you now offer as wisdom, I guess I would say?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up on a fish boat. My dad was a commercial fisherman, so work ethic was, you know, that was unwavering. Wasn't optional. There was no child labor laws back then. You know, you were on the fish boat as a teenager and you were working, and you know, that was that. You know, my mom always taught me discipline, respect. I had some great coaches, but I did have some people that just helped me along the way. When I was at the junior college, Lassen Community College, Coach Jones helped me. He was a retired coach. He helped me for many years, got me started. The Kloppenbergs got me started. Tex Winter helped me. You know, there's a multitude of people. I worked with Cheryl Reeve in the WNBA in Charlotte. And, I mean, she taught me a lot from scouting to player development. And how the professional ranks work. And then, you know, of course, Dawn. I mean, Dawn's been, you know, a figure in my life for the last two decades.
Yeah. Let's look back at your career. And was there a turning point or defining moment that you would look at, whether it was a huge, you know, you mentioned your large national championship victory. But were there also downtimes that were definitely something that you had to face that transitioned you, and you ended up probably going to the next level and you didn't expect to go to the next level? Did it turn in your, you know, your behalf, I would say?
You know, I've been lucky to work at a lot of universities that have been successful. Every time I had to leave one of those, it was not a great feeling, but it was a necessary stepping stone. I would say as far as games, you know, that COVID year where we were undefeated and you know, we didn't have an opportunity. We swept through the SEC tournament. We just were smashing people. And we were excited about the NCAA tournament. We were ready to get through that and win a national championship. We had great chemistry, great talent, youth and experience. And for that to shut down at the last minute was devastating. But I did think it gave us a focus the next year to compete and win national championships after that. You know, I don't think there's one moment in my career that I would regret. I think everything that's happened to me is kind of built who I am and what I'm about. Those experiences are, you know, one thing that Dawn always taught me, and I mentioned this in our tip-off dinner, is, you know, we were on a plane and we were struggling and we were getting hammered in the WNBA. We were at the Charlotte Sting. She was a player, I was a coach, and we just happened to be sitting next to each other on the plane. And I was like, man, I'm really struggling. I've been successful at junior college. I've never lost like this. She goes, you can always find value in something, what to do and what not to do. And I've taken that with me. So no matter what the situation is or the downfalls that, you know, happen, I think I've learned from them.
Sure. I think through adversity, right?
Yeah.
You just keep going. But yeah, she's definitely an incredible human being. And I haven't read her book yet, but it's Uncommon Favor. That's correct, I think. And
yeah.
I'm looking forward to reading that. But she was, you had an awesome tip-off party. Let's talk about developing confident women, obviously coming through those ranks. What do you try to instill in young women as they're going through D1, going to school, trying to juggle a lot of things? Mm-hmm. Summer, you know, you get injuries, you get all kinds of things that you're battling. You're just doing life at that age. What are a couple of your, like, philosophies on coaching women?
Yeah, you know, building confidence is repetition, especially on the basketball court. There's a discipline that you have to have. Again, you know, Don says, I have a lot of these. A disciplined person can do anything. So I think if you provide them structure and you give them a platform to succeed, and you're always there for them when they, you know, fall back a couple stairs on the staircase and prop them back up, I think you can develop confident young women that aspire to succeed. Part of the thing is the recruiting process. I don't recruit bad people. I recruit very good people. And good families. I mean, whether it's single mom or a great, you know, traditional family, like those people are important to me to see in the recruiting process because I can tell who they are. I can tell what they're about. We go to dinner and if they're nice to their parents, if they're, you know, rude to their parents, if they say thank you to the waiter, if they don't say anything, like those type of people. You know, the people that are rude, the people that are nice, we go towards the nice. Sometimes it hurts us in competitive games. Like, we're too nice. Like, we're helping people up. And
You need an elbow. You need throwing it around.
Yeah. But we get good people. So it's not that hard for me. They're great in the classroom. They're great on the court. The relationship piece, you just have to be there for them. To guide them, to help them. You know, I'm up in my years now, so I've had a lot of experiences. I like to share those with them. And, you know, they listen. They listen. They don't have to listen to me, but they do. They're just good people, and it's easy to mentor them.
Yeah, you got a great group of young ladies. You really do. We'll lighten it up a little bit here. I'm going to ask you about some fun things like game day rituals. Are you the coach that has a lucky tie or a certain meal you have to have or something you can't do without before tip off?
Well, I wear Air Force Ones. That's a big deal to me. So I go old school, wear Air Force Ones.
All right.
Try to wear a blazer. Try to dress up a little bit so people don't think I'm the manager. I don't really have any game day rituals. I like to eat, and it doesn't matter what I eat.
A little bit of everything, right?
Yeah, that's really not anything. I think I like a little peace before the game, a little peace and quiet, and I'll go through some end-of-game special situation scenarios in my head. You know, sometimes I watch a little Judge Judy. But other than I really don't have any serious, you know, rituals.
Yeah, Judge Judy's tough too, man. I don't know. She's pretty rough out there. I don't know. But let's talk about your so when you're not coaching, really, are you always scouting film? Are you looking towards the next game? Are you recruiting? Tell me about what you're doing when you're not necessarily coaching. Are you a golf guy? You like to golf?
You know, I like to golf, but I'm absolutely horrible. and they always say if you're a good golfer, you're a terrible coach. So
there you go. So. Then be a bad golfer. Then
so
do
I don't
not
ever
work on
want
your
to
game.
Be a good
yeah.
golfer.
Don't work on it.
In my spare time, I have a family, and you know, to their credit, they don't get to spend a lot of time with me. I'm with our team more than I'm with them. Which is, you know, sad, unfortunate, but it's part of the livelihood that we've chosen. And I have two families. I have my basketball family. I have my, you know, my true family. I like to spend time with my kids. I like to hang out with them, take them shopping, take them to the park, take them to the movies. You know, we got a pool that we jump in and act stupid in. So, you know, I like spending time with them, and then you always got to have mama time. You always got to spend time with your wife and try to have a relationship, because it's just not normal being a coach. And then when they go to bed, that's when I watch film. That's when I do scouting reports. Recruiting is probably 100% of the time, all the time. And even now that we're dipping our toe into the overseas market. So those calls are, you know,
different
all,
hours,
all,
right?
All yeah. times of night. So it depends on where they're at. So not a lot of free time, but that's how I spend it.
Awesome. Well, what's your favorite music? Are you a rock and roll guy or? rap.
You know, I'm pretty versatile. My kids got me listening to all kinds of new stuff. So, you know, I'm not.
You're agnostic in your music taste.
Yeah, I'm eclectic. I'm not stuck on one thing. If I had to choose, I'd probably do. I'm a New Edition guy.
I think. Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's your jam. I like it.
Old school.
So let's talk about. So are you a cat or a dog guy?
Dog.
All right.
But I like cats. I mean, I'll pet a cat.
So what about candy? You like chocolate, or are you a Skittles, or?
You know, again, I do not discriminate. I will eat tons of chocolate and tons of candy. I'm trying to lose some weight, so I'm scaling back. But my go-to right now is old school Sweet Tarts.
Oh.
Old school Sweet Tarts, and especially the grape ones. Oh, golly, I love those.
That's your favorite. Man, I haven't had Sweet Tarts, and I don't remember when.
Yeah, I don't know how I got back on them, but I was like, wow, I'm stuck now.
That's your new thing, so I like it. Let's talk about wine or beer.
Ooh, you know, I used to be a beer guy. Now I'm a wine guy. With age, I'm getting finer.
Yeah, you're getting the better qualities of better, life. You're getting kind of bougie. Yeah. I don't know, Coach. You got a nice wine collection. I know
You know, I'm wine on training wheels, though. I still like a little sweetness to it, but I'm trying to figure it out. We went to Napa last summer. Great time. Great food, great wine, great weather. It was fantastic. Recommend it.
That's awesome. I think with everything you're doing with coaching too, you do get to see the world a bit, right?
Oh, I'm a kid from Alaska. Like, my parents were lower middle class. Like, my mom was a librarian. My dad was a commercial fisherman. During the winter, he was a mechanic. Like, we never could go on vacations. We, you know, our vacation was we hopped in the station wagon, went in the woods. Like, it's not hard to find woods in Alaska. But now, you know, I've been to Japan, I've been to Italy, I've been to France. Like, I've seen the world, and it's because of basketball. I never would have these opportunities if it weren't for the game, and that's probably why I love it so much.
Yeah, basketball is just, I think, in this day and age, too, I mean, where do you think it's headed for women's basketball? I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of basketball, really, for women, that it's been this big, it's been this rocking, it's been this momentum is created. And where do you see it going in the future?
I mean, there's a ascension that I don't see it stopping. There's a different brand of basketball with women's basketball. I think it's more of a purist basketball game. There's more base foundation of offensive and defensive principles. Not a lot of one-on-one. There's actually, you know, there's some rhyme and reason to it. The men's game is just they're so big and so fast, and, you know, they're forced to make shots versus length, and, you know, it's a different game. I think ours is more of a truist basketball.
There's some
product.
Finesse in there.
Yeah,
there's some really strong movements that when you're on the court, especially when I'm on the sidelines now and I'm close to practice and whatnot, it's amazing the strength and the power. I don't think people recognize what type of powerful game it really is for women as well.
You know, I'm glad you said, you know, I think for the women's game right now, there's a lot of recognition. There's faces to the game. There's the Caitlin Clarks, there's the Asia Wilsons, you know, Nafisa Colliers, there's faces to the game. Men's basketball has always had those faces. They've always had a product. We have a product now. We have star power. We have, you know, these young people coming through college ranks like Caitlin Clark that have just made this game just take off. I don't think that's stopping. And it's two different products, but I think we're getting to a level where we're a valued product.
100%. So I got another question for you. What would you tell a young person listening right now, male or female, that wants to get into coaching, specifically women's basketball? What would you tell them?
Don't do it. No, you know, I don't. It's very rewarding. But if you think you're going to hop in and be what you see on TV, it's not like that. I've slept on couch cushions on a floor before, where you wake up in the morning and your butt's on the floor and your head's on the cushion. You know, I've been through some tough times. It's not for the faint of heart, unless you know people. So networking is very important. Having a network to get your foot in the door. Otherwise, I would say, you know, you got to get in on the ground level. You got to be a self-starter. You got to work ahead. You got to be able to, assess needs and do them ahead of time and make yourself a commodity, make yourself a valued piece of the team, whether it's a video coordinator, a manager, a practice player, bring value, and whoever's running that organization will see it. When they see that, you will start to climb. And with that, you just keep on doing that. Every position you get, whether it's assistant coach, do more, get in early, leave late, work smart, assess needs, get your head coach something that they don't even ask for, that they can use. Give yourself some value.
I like it. So, final question, what's your vision for the future of BGSU women's basketball?
Yeah, I want to take it back to the Sweet 16 model. Kurt was probably the last to do it. I always tell our players, there's the square WNIT banners with the blue square on it, and then there's the round NCAA banner. We need more rounds.
Sure.
So that was our focus. Last year we had a T-shirt said together, and the O had the little blue NCAA dot on it. We didn't get it last year. But I think one thing that's important is, you're building this foundation to get to that point. And I think our young women are doing that. We've changed. Our roster's changed. We look different. Our style of play has changed. It's trending more to what I envision. But it's still process. It's still process. And then you throw NIL in there, and that's a, that's a monkey wrench. That's something you have to deal with. But again, you're either on board or overboard. That train doesn't stop. So either hop on or get, run off the tracks.
Well, I can't tell you how grateful I am to have you in the studio today.
That's fantastic.
And thanks for making time. I wish you the best of luck this season. And Coach Shamil, you got game.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to Women Got Game. A special thanks to Coach Fred Shamil for joining us and sharing his journey, experiences, and passion for women's basketball. Be sure to follow the podcast for more conversations that highlight and celebrate women in sports. Don't forget to subscribe, share, or comment on what women's stories you'd like to hear about. Thanks for tuning in. Special thanks to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer, and I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Please visit us at wgte.org/womengotgame.
WGTE. Voices around us.